They don't mean too much to anyone outside the professional musical theatre, but I wouldn't mind betting that in an hour from now, anyone who happens to be listening will be a devoted Ahrens and Friedley fan. The two of them probably introduced in their productions as many outstanding songs and show music as any other partnership in this century. And however obscure their names might have become, the shows they produced will be remembered as long as one active tonsil is left in this world. But before the music, first the men. Ahrens and Friedley, two utterly opposing types. Ahrens, the man passionately in love with music, a real theatre man, and Friedley, suave and assured, smiling benignly down on the theatre rather than plunging himself into it. The twin personalities emerge as soon as the people who work for them begin talking. First, Vinton Friedley. Born Philadelphia, November 1891, educated Harvard, flirted with acting, became a producer in 1923, and remembered by Nanette Fabre as follows.
He truly was what we used to call spiffy. He was a spiffy thinker, spiffy dresser, and a spiffy person.
Spiffy? Well, that's an evocative word, and one that conjures up the image of a kind of front office dapper Dan. And that's an impression substantiated by Ray Bolger.
Vinton Friedley was really a very, very meticulous, typical sort of city New York man. His dress was the finest tailor in New York. His ties were Selka. His manner was Selka. He was very, very careful about what he tried to do in the theater.
Well, the first thing Vinton Friedley did in the theater was to form a partnership with a man called Alex Ahrens. Ahrens was no man about town like Friedley, and the contrast is described by the writer Guy Bolton.
If you're going to have class distinctions in America, which you shouldn't, I suppose, Vinton Friedley was more or less top draw personality. Alex Ahrens wasn't. Alex Ahrens was a very nice man. I became a friend of his. I was not a friend of Friedley's, though I knew him very well. I mean, we call each other friends, of course. But Ahrens had more of what wins you and what attaches you to a man than his partner did.
Well, the two portraits will be fleshed out as we proceed with the story of the Ahrens and Friedley partnership. But the one thing that the two of them had in equal abundance was an ear for good music. On the 1st of December, 1924, Ahrens and Friedley gambled on a new Words and Music Broadway partnership and made history. No matter what they might do after that, the 1st of December, 1924, was the night they got themselves into all the official histories of Broadway. They rented the Liberty Theatre, ordered the curtain to be raised, and gave them this. The librettist for Lady Be Good was Guy Bolton, who was approached by Ahrens and Friedley.
I was asked to write a play for the Astaires. They had had the Astaires do one play, Ahrens and Friedley, and it had failed in America, but it succeeded in England. And so then they told me they had the Astaires, and would I write a play for them? I naturally wrote a scenario, and we decided on the rest of the casting, and that was that.
One reason why Lady Be Good made history was that it introduced to Broadway the songwriting partnership of George and Ira Gershwin and the brother and sister team of Fred and Adele Astaire. Alex Ahrens' sister Ruth, who spoke to us on the telephone, recalls the close links between the artists.
There was a great bond of friendship. They enjoyed each other immensely. The same thing was shared by Alex and Gershwin with Fred Astaire. It wasn't just a producer relationship. It was close personal study.
Fascinating rhythm, you got me on the go. Fascinating rhythm, I'm all a quiver. What a mess you're making, the neighbors want to know why I'm always shaking, just like a flipper. Each morning I get up with the sun, start a hopping, never stopping, to find that night no work has been done. I know that once it didn't matter, but now you're doing wrong when you start to patter. I'm so unhappy. Won't you take the day off, decide to run along somewhere far away off and make it snappy? Oh, how I long to be the man I used to be. Fascinating rhythm, oh, won't you stop making on me?
With music like that, how could Ahrens and Friedli fail? And yet, the odd thing about the show Lady Be Good is that Ahrens and Friedli were obliged to drop the best song from the show. Adele Astaire sang it originally and still blames herself for its disappearance.
I must say my voice wasn't as good as it should have been to sing it, The Man I Love, you see. Because after it was sung by all the stars in the world, it was great. I don't think I did it too well. I think I was probably too young to sing about the man I love. You know, even though we were old enough, we looked younger than we were. I don't know why, but we did.
But the crowning irony is that it was because of this discarded song that Ahrens and Friedli originally got financial backing for the show. Ira Gershwin, who wrote the lyrics, tells how the financier, Otto Kahn, bought a piece of Lady Be Good.
When the producer of Lady Be Good needed money, one of the men they went to was Otto Kahn. But he wasn't interested. He said, it sounds very good. This looks like a hit show, one that will make money. I'm not interested in making money. I only like to back things, artistic ballets and so forth, where I know I'll never get any returns. Then Alex Ahrens had my brother play The Man I Love for him. Oh, well, he said, that's worth $10,000. And he put $10,000 in the show. And the show was, for its day, a hit. And when he got his money back plus a profit, he wrote to the management. He said, this is the first time it's ever happened to me that I made any money in the theater.
And in a little while, he'll take my hand. maybe not. Still, I'm sure to meet him one day. Maybe Tuesday will be my good news day. He'll build a little home just meant for two, from which I'll never roam. Who would you? And so all else above, I'm waiting for the man I
Lady Be Good, even without The Man I Love, gave Ahrens and Friedley a flying start in the Broadway theatre. And as we follow their hectic course, perhaps we should quickly fill in on Alex Ahrens. His sister Ruth can help us there.
Alex was a quiet man with a marvelous dry sense of humour, but a very positive man. He would not take no for an answer. If the door was closed, he would go around and find another door, which would open to him. And he truly loved the business.
He also loved Gershwin's music and was shrewd enough to stick close to the Gershwins for as long as was practicable. Unlike Friedley, Ahrens had known George since way back, and the two of them had become rather more than producer and composer.
My recollections of Gershwin, I remember clearly that he was a quiet, nice man. He seemed to be very charming, as I recall. He always had a big cigar. I remember that vividly. And I used to be a bookworm, and he would be working what I learned later as I, when I grew up, were the scores for these shows, for all of these songs that we now sing, up at my father's home with Alex there, because my father was always party to Alex's ventures. Financially, he was always in on it. And I would be sitting under the piano reading a book, and pounding the piano above me would be George Gershwin. And it was my favorite nest to read under the piano.
In 1927, the Gershwin brothers teamed up with Ahrens and Friedley again, who, for the second time, hired Fred and Adele Astaire to star in the show. The plot was as inconsequential as the plots of all the other musicals of the period, but the music, well, that was frankly sensational.
I love your funny face, your funny, funny face, for you're a cutie. With more than beauty, you've got such a lot of personality. Empty a thousand lots I've found from having you around. Though you're no Gloria Swanson, for worlds I'd not replace. That funny, funny face.
I remember Alex telling me once that he and Fred Astaire were in England staying at the Savoy, and they came in very late one night or early one morning from a party, and being Americans, they were naturally fascinated with the English habit of placing the shoes in front of the door to be polished. And they very meticulously each took out a suitcase from their suite and filled it with all of the shoes on the entire floor of the boy and left it in the closet.
Your vows at last I've found from having you around. Though you're no folly's beauty, you're great for kitchen duty. I love your funny face.
With shows like Funny Face and Lady Be Good, the management of Aarons and Friedley put itself in the van of American musical comedy. But the Gershwins were by no means the only songwriters that they had ears for. In November 1929, they produced a show by a different team. It was called Heads Up, and that was good advice because the stock market crash happened a fortnight before the opening night. Among the optimists involved was the dancer Ray Bolger, who recalls Vinton Friedley in some detail.
He was very, very careful about what he tried to do in the theater. When he chose, for instance, Rogers and Hart, they were the up-and-coming youngsters at that time. When you think of the lyrics of Larry Hart, you can think of how astute a man Vinton Friedley was at that time. All of New York was agog at the abilities of Larry Hart as far as lyrics were concerned.
I don't know what day it is, or if it's dark or fair. Somehow that's just the way it is, and I don't really care. I go to this or that place, I seem alive and well. Just the hat place, my breast an empty shell, and I've a faded dream to sell. All alone, all
Ship Without a Sail, forgotten after the Rogers and Hart show Heads Up finally folded, but rescued from obscurity many years later by Ella Fitzgerald. Almost exactly a year after Heads Up, Aarons and Friedley were in business with the Gershwin brothers once again, for a show that's remembered today mainly because of two unknown young ladies who were in this cast. One of them was Ginger Rogers.
Fridley was a very nice, warm, gracious type gentleman, but he was more the banker type man, to my eyes. I was kind of a young girl at that time, and I don't think I was stopping to think about the things that one thinks about later on in life.
Well, while Ginger was busy not thinking about the things she evidently started thinking about later on, a newcomer to the Broadway scene was shattering wine glasses on behalf of Ahrens and Fridley like this.
I got rhythm. I got music. I got my man who could ask for anything more. I got Daisy in green pasture. I got my man who could ask for anything more. An old man's trouble. You won't find him round my door. I got starlight and I got sweet dreams. I got my man who could ask for anything more. Who could ask for anything more?
I got music.
Who could ask for anything more? Who could ask for anything more? An old man's trouble. Say I don't mind him, 'cause you won't find him hanging around my front or back door. Who could ask for anything more? Who could ask for anything more?
Ethel Merman, who made her name in Ahrens and Fridley's production of Girl Crazy with that song, I Got Rhythm. 3 years after that, by which time the Great Depression was well set and the face of popular entertainment showed an altogether harder expression, Ahrens and Fridley did their last Gershwin show. The theatre historians remember it as one of the greatest fiascos of the decade, and not for the first time in musical history, the only thing that was right was the music itself. The lyricist, Ira Gershwin, once listed all the things he thought wrong with Pardon My English, and these included the character of the leading man, the general parlous state of the economy at the time, and the fact that nobody could be found to make the story work, even though 6 different play doctors were called in to help. Ira says that he and George only agreed to do it at all because Ahrens was broke and needed their help. Now, this is how Ruth Ahrens describes it.
I don't think Alex's energies were up to it, or Vinton's. Emotionally or mentally and physically. I think they were still at what, in today's terms, we call a downer. They were still down. And it's like a poker game and you're in too deep. For the first time, it probably, and this is purely my speculation, probably was not fun for him. But suddenly, everything that had come to him so easily, all of a sudden, was difficult. Money had always been at his fingertips, and suddenly money was not at his fingertips. George Gershwin, by then, had already entered pictures. So his eyes and sights and tastes were no longer completely centered on Broadway. He did it out of kindness and affection and love out of those years, as did Ira, his brother, who wrote many wonderful lyrics, and there were some wonderful hit songs in that show, ones that are now standards today.
Why did I wander here and there and yonder? Wasting precious time for no reason or rhyme. Isn't it a pity? Isn't it a crime? a pity we never met before. Imagine all the lonely years we've wasted. Joys untasted.
It was a pity that Ahrens and Friedley had ever met at all after the way Pardon My English turned out. 46 performances saw its demise, and after that the two speculators parted company. Ahrens went to try his luck in Hollywood, and Friedley actually had to flee the country for a while to avoid his creditors. It was a sad epilogue to the partnership, which had once been so successful that it had actually spawned its own theatre, whose name came from the first two syllables of the Christian names of the two partners, Al from Alec, Vin from Vinton. The Alvin Theatre, which stands to this day. In the meantime, after Pardon My English and the retreat to the west coast of Ahrens, Friedley somehow managed to get back into America without being waylaid by too many creditors, and somehow actually managed to raise the money for a new production. And what a production! It was the start of a long association between Friedley and Cole Porter, and the man who wrote the book was our old friend Guy Bolton, who remains adamantly determined to display no false modesty about the virtues of what he was involved in, and quite right, too.
I don't think that I know of any modern musical that is superior to the ones that were done in that period. Certainly other composers at the present time, there isn't anyone comparable to Cole Porter, and who I think probably is right at the top, you might say. I wrote that one play with him, Anything Goes, and it's been extraordinarily successful. He wrote five great numbers in it. You're the Top, I Get a Kick Out of You, Low Gabriel Blow, All Through the Night, and the title song, Anything Goes. They're all smash hits, every one of them.
In olden days, with lips of stocking, was the god of something shocking, I have a nose. Anything goes. Good on the two, who once knew better, was now only useful and the world riding prose. Anything goes. The world has gone bad today, looks bad today, black's white today, day's night today, the whole sky's today, the women cries today, are just sitting alone.
After the fresh and flying start of the Cole Porter-Vinton-Friedley relationship, naturally other shows followed. And in 1936, we have a typical example of how Friedley could use his diplomatic talents in a crisis. In 1936, he produced a Cole Porter show called Red Hot and Blue, which helped to make Bob Hope a big name, but which was bedeviled by the fact that neither of its two biggest names, Ethel Merman and Jimmy Schnozzle Durante, would agree to take second billing to the other. In the end, Friedley solved the problem by giving them both second billing. He put his own name at the top.
Oh, the night is young, the skies are clear, and if you want to go walking, dear, it's delightful, it's delicious, it's lovely. I understand the reason why you're sentimental, for so am I. It's delightful, it's delicious, it's lovely. You can tell at a glance what a swell night this is for romance. You can hear dear Mother Nature murmuring low, let yourself go, so please. chickadee. And when I kiss you, just say to me, it's delightful, it's delicious, it's delectable, it's delirious, it's dilemma, it's the limit, it's the loop, it's the lonely. Time marches on, and so it's plain. You've won my heart, and I've lost my brain. It's delightful, it's delicious, it's lovely. Life seems so sweet that we decide it's in the bag to get unified. It's delightful, it's delicious, it's so lovely. See the crowd in that church. See the proud parson flopped on his perch. Get the sweet beat of that organ sealing our doom. Here goes the groom, boom, how they cheer and how they smile as we go galloping down the aisle. It's divine, dear, it's divine, dear, it's a wunderbar, it's a victory, it's a volum, it's a vena, it's a voice, it's a lovely.
Two years after Red Hot and Blue opened, there was the third Porter Friedley Alliance for a show called Leave It to Me. In the cast was Gene Kelly, now only 2 years away from stardom in Pal Joey, but still very much in the shadow of the stars Mary Martin, Sophie Tucker, and the veteran Victor Moore. It was Mary Martin who came out of the episode best of all, as Cole Porter recalls.
I'm not always right, but I was right in the case of a little girl who came to audition for me in 1938, it was. We had June Knight for the part. She left with a Texas millionaire. So we were up a tree for that part, and this agent suddenly called up, said, I have a little girl from the West Coast who might be good. And he brought up this little girl who gave a very good audition. And then I gave her a song I'd written for the part called My Heart Belongs to Daddy.
While tearing off a game of golf, I may make a play for the caddy. But when I do, I don't follow through, 'cause my heart belongs to Daddy. If I invite a boy some night to dine on my fine Finnan patty, I just adore his asking for more, but my heart belongs to Daddy. Yes, my heart belongs to Daddy, so I simply couldn't be bad. Yes, my heart belongs to Daddy, Dad, 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 Daddy Ann. So I want to warn you, laddie, though I think you're perfectly swell, that my heart belongs to Daddy, 'cause my daddy, he treats it so well.
Leave It to Me was a reasonable success, and Vinton Friedley, by now a real veteran, having been producing shows for nearly 20 years, soldiered on into the new decade of the 40s. But the difficulty with men of his type very often is to try to ascertain exactly what it was that they did. I mean, what does a producer produce? Apart, of course, from backers to provide the money. Well, it so happens that Friedley's 1940 Broadway success, Cabin in the Sky, provides us with the perfect anecdote to answer the question of, what did you do in the war, Daddy? Cabin in the Sky was one of those musicals with pseudo-religious overtones. Now, that's to say, it very daringly suggested that good was more good than evil. But not even the mildness of that message was quite mild enough for the star of the show, Ethel Waters. Rady Harris, the columnist, modestly describes this next story as marvelous.
I was very much in love with Mr. Friedley at the time, and so I sat up until 6 o'clock in the morning because they had an all-night run-through before the opening. And in the middle of it, Ethel Waters, who was a deeply religious woman, told Vinton during a very brief interval that she didn't think she could go on with it because she had just gotten a message from God that the character became vulgar in the second act, you see.
Well, Miss Waters' ecclesiastical connections appear to have been a bit on the spectacular side, but Friedley appears to have been equal to the situation. Rady Harris proceeds with her religious fable.
Well, this was quite a dilemma just before the opening night. Vinton rang down the curtain and went backstage to her dressing room and said, Miss Waters, if you are a deeply religious woman, I would have another talk with God, because I'm sure that God would not want you to throw all these people out of work the night before the opening, and I'm sure that he would want you to go on with the show. So she said, I will give you 5 minutes, and you just go back in your dressing room. So she went back in her dressing room, and we all were sitting there waiting for this verdict, and she finally came out and said, well, I've just had a conversation, and he says it's all right to go ahead. And so the curtain was raised, and the opening night was a triumph. She was marvelous in it. But those are the things that producers have to go through that nobody knows, you know, behind the scenes.
Here I go again. Just hearing trumpets blow again. Right now I'm all aglow again. Though I've been taking a chance on your love. Once more I try to prove again. I still can make life move again. Because I'm back here in the groove again. And I'm taking a chance on love. Even walking round with a horseshoe. And in clover I lie. So, Mr. Rabbit, of course you. I'm gonna kiss your foot goodbye. Believe me when I say I'm on the ball again. Yet I may be riding for that fall again. I'm in here pitching, giving my all again. Taking a chance on love. This game I'm taking a crack at. Sure needs good luck with me. So I'm taking a whack at any black cat that I see. For I'm booked again. I'm in the swim and hooked again. This goose of mine may be cooked again, but I'm still taking that chance on your love. Oh, but I am.
Having consorted with the Almighty on the subject of whether he had cast Cabin in the Sky to his own best advantage, Vinton Friedley returned in the following year of 1941 to his now favourite composer-lyricist Cole Porter and produced a show called Let's Face It. It was notable for a special reason, as Cole Porter tells us.
Let's Face It was the first show in which Danny Kaye was starred. Well, he sang a ballad called You Are to Me Everything, and he sang it charmingly, too. But then he had a patter song called Let's Not Talk About Love.
My buddies all tell me selectees are expected by ladies to necktease. I could talk about love and why not? But believe me, it wouldn't be so hot. So let's talk of Lamar, that Hetty so fair. Why does she let Joan Bennett wear all her old hair? If you know Garbo, then tell me this news. Is it a fact the Navy's launched all her old shoes? Let's check on the veracity of Barrymore's vivacity and why is drink capacity she gets so much publicity. Let's even have a huddle over Harvard University. But let's not talk about love. Let's wish him good luck. Let's wish him more power. That Fiorella fella, my favorite flower. Let's get some champagne from over the seas and drink to Sammy Goldwyn. Include me out, please. Let's write a tune that's playable, a ditty swing and swayable. Let's say whatever sayable about our available. Let's cheer for the career of Itty Bitty Betty Grayable. But let's not talk about love. Let's talk about drugs. Let's talk about dope. Let's try to picture Paramount minus Bob Hope. Let's start a new dance. Let's try a new step. Or investigate the cause of Mrs. Roosevelt's pep. Why not discuss, my dearie, the life of Wallace Beery? Or bring a Jeroboam on and write a drunken poem on astrology, mythology, geology, philology, pathology, psychology, electrophysiology, spermology, phrenology. I owe you an apology, but let's not talk about... Oh, in case you play cards, I have some right here. So how about a game of gin rummy, my dear? Or if you feel warm and bathing's your whim, let's get in the yacht together and enjoy a short swim. But honey, I suspect you all of being intellectual, and so instead of gushing on, let's have a big discussion on timidity, stupidity, solidity, frigidity, avidity, turbidity, Manhattan and acidity, fatality, morality, legality, finality, neutrality, reality, or southern hospitality, pomposity, verbosity. I'm losing my velocity, but let's not talk about love.
Let's not talk about love with Danny Kaye. So, you see, Vinton Friedley was by no means a back number. Indeed, 1944, the year which marked the 20th anniversary of his big success with Alex Ahrens and the Gershwin brothers in Lady Be Good, saw him entering the battle one more time. This show was called Jackpot, and alas, that was the one thing it never turned out to be. But it did furnish posterity with another example of the producer stepping into the breach as one of the cast faces a crisis. Having ascended to heaven itself, a cabin in the sky, Friedley found himself ascending once more for Jackpot, but this time only as far as the upper reaches of the building. To a man who has done a deal with the Archangels, it must have seemed like child's play. One of the members of the cast was Nanette Fabre, who soon found herself at her wit's end, a position to which she appears to have been no stranger.
There was one scene where I was supposed to appear on a balcony, and Alan Jones was to sing the love song to me. And the balcony was a little tiny piece of a board, it seemed like, attached to a canvas drop that came in from the flies, and they pulled up a ladder behind it that I was to climb. I was to walk through a little archway and step out onto this board in front of this balcony, which was only as wide as my shoes. And I was a little nervous about it. I didn't have a fear of height at that time, but I was tentative. And I went up the ladder, stepped across through the little archway, and the stagehands had forgot to connect the flat to the stairs. And as I stepped off the stairs with one foot, the two pieces of scenery separated, and there I was doing a split in the air, about 15 feet in the air, with this thing flapping around. I managed to get back on the ladder, but by then I was really quite frightened and came down and wouldn't go back up. So Vinton said, well, I'm going to go up and I'm going to try it. And he went up and he said, see, it's all right. So I went back up, but I, again, was very, very tentative. And I finally was able to get out on this little teeny tiny board. You must remember, it was built for perspective. As I say, it was only as wide as my feet, and it looked like I had a high balcony, but it only came up to my knees so that the audience sitting down in the first rows of the theater would look up, and it would look like a big high railing. There was nothing for me to lean onto or touch. And Vinton came up behind me, and he grabbed me by the shoulders, and he said, see, there's nothing to be afraid of, and shook me to show me how sturdy it was, and I fainted dead away in his arms with this little tiny thing up there, and it's a miracle that two of us didn't fall over. And when they finally revived me, because I didn't see him, I didn't expect him. You just suddenly, from no place, to have someone shake you in that kind of a situation. I don't know why the two of us weren't killed, and from that day to this, I have a terrible fear of that specific kind of height, standing on the edge of something that I can't touch. I never told him. It would have hurt him terribly if you'd known what he'd done to me. He was well intended, good intentions, but it certainly backfired. Every night through the whole run of the play, I would stand there just clinging to that archway. Everybody said it looked so dramatic, and it was. It was all I could do to just stand there.
Oh, don't just stand there, Miss Fabre. Please do something.
Going Louisiana hayride, get going, we all is ready. Start something Louisiana hayride, no use for calling the roll. Oh, I like that sport, sitting in the hay, loving it away. Oh, oh, for the time is short, crack your little whip, get your little ship to go. Start something Louisiana hayride, no fooling, we all is happy. Get going, Louisiana hayride.
No use for calling the roll.
Jasmine Washington.
I's here.
The wheat pea Oglethorpe.
I am here.
Jonquil Jezebel.
Yeah.
Lemon Verbena.
I is here.
Mo and Freddy. Lily and Nettie.
We is here. We all here.
Sheik and Lemuel. Hiram and Samuel.
We is here. We all here.
Primrose Paradise.
I am here.
Daisy
Dandelier is here! We all here, we all here, can't you see?
Well, if you is really ready and you're going steady, get going, Louisiana hay, Louisiana hay ride. Start something, Louisiana hay, no use to call, no use to call.
Get
no use to bother to call the roll.
Get going,
oh, a well, life that's long. Loving it away, ow, ow. The time is short, crack your little whip. Get your little ship,
get your little ship.
Get your little ship to go.
Get going.
Louisiana hayride, clear the way. Watch out, kind step aside.
Get going.
Friedley's career as a producer was drawing finally to an honorable close. He retained the affection of the profession right to the end, and that's no mean feat in a profession where the news that you're back is the signal for most of your friends to stick their knives in it. Nanette Fabre, for instance, seems to suspect Friedley of being a bit of a bohemian, but assures us that, like Ginger Rogers, she was thinking of other things at the time.
I was very young at that time, I'm happy to say, and I didn't fit in with his crowd. I never saw any of the wildlife that was attributed to him. I was underage. I don't think he dared offer any of the good life. If it did happen, I don't think he dared involve me because we have very strict laws in this country. I don't know. Maybe I missed something. I have no idea. But he was quite a marvelous person, the little that I do remember.
A somewhat equivocal moral stance, if I ever heard one. The other people who remember Vinton Friedley and his old partner, Alex Ahrens, recall rather more of the music he introduced and rather less of the private gentleman. In fact, Ahrens and Friedley, whatever kind of men they might have been, and they both seem to have been extremely well-liked by practically everybody, will be found in the history books for their professional championing of talents like those of the Astaires, the Gershwins, Cole Porter, and many others. Ruth Ahrens recounts the closing paragraphs in the story. After the failure of Pardon My English in 1933, Ahrens departed.
My brother didn't live much longer after that. He moved out to Los Angeles, started getting his foot into the motion picture business, was involved in Broadway Melody of 1930-something, the one in which he found Robert Taylor, which introduced Robert Taylor to the movie world. And he put Eleanor Parker into that film, I recall. Then he had an asthma attack, suffered a heart attack as a result of the asthma, and died. A young man, he died in his 40s. Vinton lived out a good, glorious life into his mid or late 70s, until, as I say, just a few years ago.
In fact, it was such a good and glorious life that we haven't had time to pack into 1 hour all the rich melodies that Ahrens and Friedley introduced. Rady Harris reminds us of one.
I remember Vinton used to regale me with stories. He used to sit in his office, and he would call six backers up and say, I've got a play. I've got Ethel Merman and Jimmy Durante and Bob Hope in it. It's called Red Hot Blue, and Howard Lindsay and Russell Crouse had written the book, and Cole Porter's written the score. And over the phone, he would get $75,000.
Life great, life grand, future all planned, no more clouds in the sky. How am I riding? I'm riding by someone I love, man for my love. So long, Jonah, goodbye. How am I riding? I'm riding high, floating.
Today, Ahrens and Friedley are almost forgotten, and their name is only perpetuated in the cryptic name of the theatre that they built, the Alvin. For the last word, Nanette Fabre on Vinton Friedley.
He was a spiffy thinker, spiffy dresser, and a spiffy person.
And here is some spiffy music that he put his money on.
I love your funny face, your funny, funny face, for your with more than beauty, you've got such a lot of personality. And a thousand laughs I've found from having you around. Though you're no Gloria Swanson, for worlds I'd not replace that funny, funny face.
And what about Alex Ahrens? If his partner was spiffy, what about him? Was he spiffy too? On the contrary. His sister Ruth says,
flashy Alex was not. Alex was conservative.
But not in his musical tastes. So let's bid the partners farewell with the piano playing of the young chap that Alex Ahrens got friendly with and who did so much to establish the masthead produced by Ahrens and Friedley on the Broadway marquees of a lost age. George Gershwin, whose music still gives modern audiences that certain feeling.
The American Showman was presented by Michael Craig, researched by Bill Sullivan, and written by Benny Green. The producer was David Raven Allen. And now Benny has a few more words to say, this time in person.
It's pretty obvious from the programme we just heard that Alex Ahrens and Vincent Freely had very little in common except each other. For a while, they did manage to form an improbable alliance that worked. Next week, again, we have two showman heroes. Again, absolutely contrasted types. But this time, a case of two men who never really worked together. In that case, why pair them off? Well, because they kept popping in and out of each other's stories, they mixed with the same artists, they liked the same kind of shows, and they're both wildly successful with a lot of the things they do. Dwight Wyman was the rich Irish-American. Max Gordon was the poor Jewish immigrant. Both of them had a lot to do, especially in their early days, around the end of the 1920s, with the perfecting of that long-lost art, the intimate review, where a series of sketches performed by a small, versatile cast props up a distinguished set of songs that have no common denominator, except that they happen to be in the same programme. I suppose Max Gordon could have claimed legitimately enough to have produced the greatest review of all time, certainly the one with the most gifted cast, the Astaires, Frank Morgan, Helen Broderick, and certainly a show with the most mesmeric music. Now, Max Gordon introduced that in the 1931 review, The Bandwagon. But by then, the composers of The Bandwagon, Arthur Schwartz and Howard Dietz, had already done two reviews for Wyman. So, in a way, Gordon took over the process that Wyman had begun, with productions called The Little Show and The Second Little Show. Men like Wyman and Gordon had a gift of recognising lightly talent and introducing it to the Broadway musical theatre. It was Gordon, for instance, who cast an ex-tea planter called Sidney Greenstreet in the show Roberta. And Gordon, again, who pulled off a much more spectacular ploy when he was looking around for light comedians for that same show that Sidney Greenstreet helped to fill out. Roberta was a musical about ladies' dresses. So how a fatso-like Greenstreet fitted in, we'll never know. But the other newcomer sounds a lot less improbable.
I discovered Bob Hope. Bob Hope was playing the Palace Theatre, playing four shows a day.
And Jerome Kern and Otto Harbach and Max came over to see me and decided that I would be okay for the show. That was a super show and a super show for me because I had a great part and I was running all the way through it and had a chance to do a lot of things.
Max Gordon was understandably proud of having spotted a potential like Hope's. But Wyman, too, had his moments. Wyman it was who had the distinction of producing Fred Astaire's last stage musical, The Gay Divorce. Wyman, again, who presided over the first musical to include an entire ballet company. That was, of course, the Rodgers and Hart show On Your Toes, for which Rodgers wrote something without his partner Larry Hart for the first and last time in their partnership, Slaughter on 10th Avenue, which, of course, needed no words because the music said it all. Next week, several of the people who work with or for Max Gordon and Dwight Wyman will give their account of things. Composers Johnny Green and Arthur Schwartz. Performers Claire Luce, Bob Hope, Ray Bolger, Alfred Drake. And most revealing of all, Max Gordon himself, one of the most famous talkers in general about the musical theatre, which so obsessed him. And there will also be a glimpse of an ironic failure that wasn't really a failure at all, a certain song in a Cole Porter show called Jubilee. Dwight Wyman produced it, and nobody really noticed the song at all, at least not for 2 years. By then, the show had closed and been forgotten. And then the song, which nobody had thought much of first time round, began to make itself known. It went like this, and it still does.
When they begin, the beginning, it brings back the sound of music so tender. It brings back like a night of tropical splendor. It brings back a memory. By the shore, an orchestra's playing, and even the palms seem to be swaying when they begin.
Benny Green was previewing next week's American Showman.